I'd like to call the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting to order. I'll let the record reflect it's Tuesday, January 30th, 3:31 p.m. We are currently in the Belts Committee Room in Juneau, Alaska. Want to remind people to turn off their cell phones before we begin. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Bjorkman, myself, Chair Kawasaki, and Senator Klayman has been excused. I wanted to thank Sav Danberg from Senate Records and Shelby Carroll, the moderator for the Legislative Information Offices today. Today we have one item before us, and that is to hear Executive Order 128 to separate the membership of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Energy Authority and the membership of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Let's see if she's on. Maybe not on yet. We are supposed to have Emily Nauman is on. Okay, great. First, we will have Emily Nauman. She is on audio to discuss the Legislative Legal Services memo dated January 26th, the subject being Executive Order Number 128. To separate the membership of the Board of Directors of AEA and ADA. And you should have copies of that. There's also public copies that are sitting at the table for those who want to read along. Are you with us there, Emily?
I am, yes.
Wonderful. Thanks, Ms. Nauman. We just received this memo a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't really had an opportunity to dig that deeply through it. But I don't know if you wanted to just start with a high level and maybe we can have questions of members.
Sure. And I'm happy to go into as much detail or as little sort of knowing that you have the memo in front of you as you would like. But for the record, this is Emily Nauman. I'm the Director of Legislative Legal Services. Good afternoon. I was asked, as you heard, to speak about and summarize the memo from our office related to Executive Order 128 today, which removes members of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, frequently referred to as ADA, as the members of the Alaska Energy Authority, or the AEA Board, and replaces those members with a new list of directors. A copy of the memo is available to you, it sounds like, but in summary, the memo concludes that EO 128 likely exceeds the governor's executive order authority under the Alaska Constitution. Does anyone have any questions about that? Otherwise, I can go through generally the governor's authority under the Constitution and then discuss why our office concluded that the changes in EO 128 were unconstitutional.
Sure. If you'd like to just, continue on that thread, and if there are questions, we'll have them at the end and conclusion.
Okay, great. So stepping back, the governor's authority to issue executive orders comes from Article 3, Section 28 of the Constitution of the State of Alaska. That section states that the governor may make changes in the organization of the executive branch or in the assignment of functions among its units, which he considers necessary for efficient administration. Where these changes require the force of law, they shall be set forth in executive orders. So the executive order that you have before you, Executive Order 128, is born from this authority that the governor has in the Constitution. Generally, we give deference to the authority of the governor to make organizational changes to the executive branch. This deference is supported by the minutes of the Constitutional Convention that's discussed in the memo and Alaska Supreme Court rulings, which are also discussed in detail in the memo. However, the power of the governor to change law by executive orders is not without bounds. The power to pass laws is generally conferred upon the legislature under Article 2, Section 1. That's you. And the doctrine of the separation of powers dictates that one branch of government is prohibited from encroaching on or exercising the power of another branch. There's an exception for a constitutional carve-out, and that's sort of how we view this executive order power. It's an encroachment on a legislature's lawmaking power. Generally, courts will view these encroachments very, very, very narrowly. So the most appropriate way to view the executive order power is as of limited power of the governor to amend statutes as necessary to reorganize the executive branch. So while the governor may, through an executive order, make changes in the organization of the executive branch, he may not go so far as to expand, contract, or change the functions of a reorganized board or department, nor may the governor otherwise change law by executive order. Turning back to EO 128, as we said at the beginning, EO 128 removes members of ADA as the board of AEA and replaces those members with a new list of directors. The new list of directors is created wholesale in the executive order. In other words, the criteria and the list of board members you see in the executive order are not appearing elsewhere in law. They're sort of just all new. Nowhere else in law does the qualifications established for the AEA board exist. So because the EO composes the board of new members and creates new qualifications for those members, we have determined that it creates new law. Our office considers this an unconstitutional encroachment on the legislature's lawmaking authority that exceeds the governor's limited power to amend statutes as necessary to reorganize the executive branch. Does anyone have any questions so far?
Yeah, I guess I do. Emily, can you tell me if the governor were to withdraw this and just submit legislation as the governor frequently does through the rules chairs of both bodies, would that, and he would do something similar to what's drafted here, would that be what, would that be something that would be proper in your opinion?
Yes, that is permissible, and I believe it's ultimately the correct form for the legislation that you see in front of you as a bill. That way the legislature, excuse me, could consider, is this the right number of people for this board? Do they have the right qualifications? What the terms should be, you know, the term period should be, how long each member serves, et cetera. So in my opinion, the change made in the executive order number 128 should really be in a bill and not in an executive order.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. We have a question from Senator Wilikowski. I also wanted to let folks know that we do have one person to testify, and that will be Curtis Thayer, the executive director of the Alaska Energy Authority. And we also have Parker Patterson, an assistant attorney general from the Department of Law, I think, who will be actually signified questions only. But we can direct questions first to Ms. Nauman. So, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the testimony. Under the system for EOs, if we do nothing, then this executive order presumably goes into effect, even though you're saying it's unconstitutional. And I'm just curious if the board were replaced in compliance with this EO and that new board took action and somebody sued, what remedies would be available to a court? Could a court potentially find that any actions of that new AEA board were illegal and maybe throw out anything that they've done?
Again, for the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Senator Wilikowski. Yes, you're correct that ultimately, as I suggest in the memo, I think the best course of action for the legislature, if they determine that this EO exceeds the scope of the governor's power, is to disapprove it in joint session. But I agree with your assessment that if the executive order ultimately passes and the new board of AEA is assembled and takes some action, that very well could be subject to suit. Yes.
Senator Wilikowski, or other questions of Ms. Nauman? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Nauman. You might want to just stay on for a couple more seconds.
Okay.
We have Mr. Parker Patterson from the Department of Law who's here for questions, and I expect there might be some questions for him. It says questions only. So, Mr. Patterson, we do have a question from Senator Wilikowski. If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We sure can. Thank you for being online.
Yes. I am Parker Patterson. I am a Senior Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law Civil Division.
Great. Thank you. And we have Senator Willekowski with a question for you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I assume you heard the testimony from legislative legal, and I'm just curious if you disagree with that testimony.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator, we've looked at this same question, and we agree with a lot of the things that that Ledge Legal has to say about this, but we have a slightly different interpretation. This is a really unique provision of the Constitution of Alaska that you don't find in many other states. In fact, we were only able to identify one other state, which was Michigan, which also took this same provision out of the model constitution, which was heavily influential on Alaska's constitution as well. And so, when we went back and looked at kind of the background of the drafters of the constitution and, the historical practice, we found a lot of precedents for the kinds of things that are being done in these executive orders, including this one. And I guess where we would draw a distinction with what Ledge Legal has said is this concept of, making, quote, new law. What the Constitution says is that the governor has the authority to make changes in the structure in the organization of the executive branch and to the assignment of functions among its units. Now, that's just a general power. However, when that requires the force of law, it shall be done in an executive order. What that presupposes is that it will require new law. That is kind of the entire function of an executive order. And so from our point of view, when we see the governor exercising his authority under an executive order, we're not asking, or we don't think the correct question is this new law? From our point of view, we see it as a question of, is this an exercise of organizing the structure of the executive branch or the assignment of functions among its units? And so this is a question of the board of directors of a public corporation. And so it is not going to the functions or duties or powers of this corporation. It goes to the structure, the organization of its board of directors. And so to the extent that, the governor is exercising authority to reorganize that by creating new members, that is an entirely appropriate exercise of the governor's authority. When the governor split Hess into two, he was able to create new positions, including a new department head. And similarly, when he creates this board of this corporation, he's able to create new positions. And, governors in the past have exercised authorities like this. Like in Executive Order 27, a previous governor created an entirely new commission out of whole cloth and established who the members would be. Similarly, in the past, in executive orders like Executive Orders 71, 83, and 84, governors have merged boards and thereby changed the substantive memberships of those boards, of the resulting boards of the new entity. And so this is the kind of thing that, has similar precedents in the past and is entirely within the text of the Constitution. Because, we're not looking at a question of what, whether it's new law or not, or whether it's creating new law, because that's exactly what an executive order does. That's the purpose of it. And so we go back to, is it reorganizing or is it assigning functions? And we see this as just an application of those principles, which, necessarily are going to require, quote, new law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Senator Willekowski.
So when you started out your testimony saying that you agreed with much of Ms. Nauman's testimony and the substance of her testimony was that this was unconstitutional, I'm just curious, which parts of her testimony did you agree with?
We agree with the idea that the purpose of an executive order is to affect the structure or the organization of the executive branch and not to alter the substantive functions. And so that kind of gets the idea of assignment, through the chair, I apologize. That gets to the concept of assignment of functions among the units and not creation or destruction of functions among the units. And so, when the governor restructures, including, creating whole new entities or eliminating existing entities, He can't thereby eliminate a function or create a new function. What he can do is change those and move them between different units of the executive branch. And so that's how we agree that it is a limited grant of legislative power to the executive. And the test does this go to reorganization or assignment of functions? And that we agree with led to legal on.
One last
question. Yep, Senator Willikowski.
So there's a dispute between lawyers. I don't know what the right answer is, but it just seems to me that there's general agreement, at least from many people that I've heard, that this is a good idea to do this. And it just seems legally safer to me to do it by legislation, because if you do it by executive order and you're wrong, then anybody could sue potentially if AEA did something that they disagreed with, and then potentially any action that AEA takes after this new board is constructed could be construed as being illegal. So it just seems to me like the safer approach is, and probably not even very controversial approach, is to just do it by legislation. Do you disagree with that assessment?
Through the chair, Senator, that is not necessarily a legal question. I would defer to the administration on, you know, what is the best path forward. But it is our studied opinion that this is a permissible and legal path forward.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson, for being here to testify. Are there any further questions for Ms. Naumann from Legal Services or Mr. Patterson from Department of Law before we have a presentation? Okay. Hearing none, we have a presentation from Curtis Thayer, who is the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. And it looks like you might have some other folks that might be able to help you out if you've got questions. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Curtis Thayer, and I do serve as the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. And the good news is I'm not an attorney, therefore I don't have an opinion on that particular matter. More on my testimony is on the merits of the EO and the separation of the two boards. A little bit about the Alaska Energy Authority. We're broken down into six different areas. Rail Belt. AEA owns Bridle Lake Hydro Project, as well as the Alaska Intertie and the Sterling to Quartz Creek Transmission Line, which benefits the Rail Belt consumers. And when we talk about from Bradley, it produces 17% of its power actually gets transmitted to Fairbanks along transmission lines owned by other utilities, but the bulk of them owned by the Alaska Energy Authority. We also run the Power Cost Equalization Program in rural Alaska, which provides $45 million a year to help stabilize the rates to pay the same rates as we do between Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau on a weighted average, which is about 20 cents a kilowatt. And then in rural Alaska, we focus on bulk fuel, tank farms, diesel powerhouses, and the operation and training through our circuit rider program for emergency response. We also have a team doing renewable energy and energy efficiency. That could include biomass, hydro, solar, wind, and other technologies. We also have grants through the Renewable Energy Fund, and we do loans through the Power Cost Equalization Fund. The REF, as we call it, the Renewable Energy Fund, has put out $300 million, thanks to the legislature and this governor and previous governors. And with that, that's developed over 100 projects. In operation today and displaces 85 million gallons of diesel fuel. So it has been a successful program. And then with loans, we do have the Power Project Fund, where we've funded various projects across the state. Our largest happens to be Halungni, which is a hydro project in southeast Alaska. But we've also funded the two largest solar farms in Alaska, both at Houston and at Willow. And then we do energy planning in collaboration with local and regional partners. And AEA also participated in the governor's energy task force and the results that came from that. So we have a very broad portfolio. Not mentioned on here is we have in the last 2.5 years been successful in obtaining over $634 million in federal grants. So when you look at AEA and one of the reasons for the separation of the board, our capital budget, not including this year, has grown in 4 years by 1,004%, and will most likely be well over 2,000 to 3,000% with the GRIP application receiving funding. As far as active projects and services, this just kind of gives you a little bit of of where we operate in Alaska, and this is any given month. We are operating, whether that through the powerhouses or bulk fuel or PCE or various hydro projects, transmission lines, or other projects, and also responding to emergencies. So again, very broad across the state. Kind of what's the why behind Executive Order 128? And as the governor said, he finds it in the best interest for efficient administration to separate the memberships of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Energy Authority from the membership of the Directors of the Alaska Energy Authority. Historically, from 1976 to 1993, AEA had a separate board, and it was the act of of the legislature and a previous speaker, and they ended up combining boards, and that's the way we've operated for the last 30 years, but we did have our own board. Kind of the distinct purposes, the underlying purpose of AIDA and AEA are fundamentally different. AEA's mission is to reduce the cost of energy in Alaska, whereas AIDA's mission is to provide various means of financing to promote economic development and diversity. Our unique mission in lowering the cost of Alaska is we work to diversify Alaska's energy portfolio, whether that's increasing resilience, reliability, or redundancy. Our mission is growing and has continued to grow, especially these last several years. As I had mentioned, our budget over the last 4 years has grown over 1,000%. From $17.5 million to last year, almost $193 million. And this year, we have federal receipt authority that will be coming for $206 million with that federal grant, not to mention matching, not to mention other opportunities that we've been able to attain in grants. We have a distinct enterprise. And so when we kind of, I think one thing is to look at is the skills and expertise required for governance is common and appropriate for a single purpose entity. You know, a governing board is made up of experts in topic areas. I love our AIDA board, but they're focused on economic development. And sometimes in rural Alaska, when we're responding to an electrical emergency, or we're looking at grant money, or we're looking we have $52 million for electric vehicles. That's a little bit different than the economic development focus on it. As far as staffing, currently AIDA has 48 PCNs. We hope to add 20. We'll have that conversation at a later date. With all these federal dollars coming in, AIDA has 31 PCNs, so we're already larger than AIDA. And then we have what we call shared services, where between the two agencies, we share IT, HR, some of the accounting. We share a legal counsel right now. And so we have shared services that are outside of that. But AEA has continued to grow. And like I said, it continues to be larger than AEA. And that's just because of the size and the speed in which we are growing.
Oh, yeah, we have a question for you from Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, just on that, Curtis, is there... is there a fiscal note to this split? Just with the shared PCNs, is that going to require, have you guys talked about that or any fiscal impact from this?
Through the chair, at this time, the fiscal note is approximately $28,500 because what that will entail is that's what the cost of the AIDA board is. And so we assume that that board is the same number of board. We're assuming a similar diversity across the state and, assuming the same number of meetings, so it's $28,500. As far as how AIDA and AEA split its cost, we do it just about 50-50. Some cases, AEA picks up 60-40 just because we're using more of a particular resource within shared services. And there's some other things within it, but if somebody, employees need desk or computer, AEA pays for what we need in that regard. We share an accounting software system. We share a building. AEA does not pay rent for that building. So there's a few costs such as that. But for the most part, AIDA and AEA have those costs split between the two agencies pretty evenly.
So just for goodness
sake. Senator Wilkowski. Yeah.
So after this is, after this EO goes into effect, is there, do you expect to just everything, you know, memos of understanding to continue the shared services and the building lease agreement and things like that?
I believe that's the intent with the governor's EO, that'd be the same. And we do have an MOU between ADA and AEA, so we understand how we kind of divide up and split some cost. But again, we are going to do a more in-depth look at that to figure out if there is a complete separation, but that was not the intent of the EO, to be a complete separation in the sense of the shared services and stuff like that that we currently have. We, for example, we have two HR folks. With the addition of IIJ, we might add three, but we would be picking up that cost. But if we were to stand up our own, then we would need two, and ADA might need two, and then you got four, you know. So those have to be looked at. But for right now, we do have just 15 people that are truly shared within that structure. As proposed, the governor's board membership makeup would include the Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and six public members, one with a managing or operating electrical utility that is not connected to an interconnected energy grid, basically a rural Alaska component or person. One member has expertise in developing energy projects in rural communities. One person that would be managing or operating electric utility on the rail belt transmission, and then financial expertise in large-scale energy development. And then two members with a finance, energy policy, energy technology, engineering, law, or type of background. This is very similar to the board we had prior to 1993. We talked about AEA's growth, you know, and the anticipation we have right now in the pipeline. We have $84 million that we have received in federal grants. We have $573 that we call conditional, but we're in the process of grant agreements, or we've already received the okay for funding, and the funding is coming over multiple years. So that's $573 million. And then we currently have $104 million out in competitive grant applications, pending decision by Department of Energy, the ability for tax incentives for clean energy projects and direct reimbursement available. That's one of the things we're looking at. That's one of the areas where we need some expertise in. And then in addition to AEA's net value, we did receive, which is in the 573 number, $413 million to build an undersea high voltage direct current from Kenai Peninsula to Anchorage, or really to Beluga. And then we have Dixon Diversion, where we have an opportunity to expand the footprint of Bradley Lake Hydro Project by 50%. And we could do that by our own calculations, started in 2026, completed in 2030. And that actually would displace 1.5 billion feet of cubic gas, or 7.5% of the demand that would be needed in 2030. And then currently we have $90 million in rail belt transmission upgrades that we're undertaking of the SSQ line, which is an AEA asset that we purchased several years ago from Homer Electric, and that is to bring that up to capacity. One thing, we've had very cold temperatures in South Central Alaska, and Bradley is operating at capacity and moving power north, hydro, firm power. But again, we're restricted by the size of our power lines, and that's the reason for the upgrades. And obviously, that's one of the reasons for the HVDC line, to provide redundancy in a second way off Kenai. But those are projects that we have ongoing right now. Also, we were involved in the Alaska Energy Security Task Force. But in addition to what we do and what we have in federal funding coming in, we still have the backbone of the rural power system upgrades and bulk fuel upgrades in rural Alaska, the Renewable Energy Fund, the Alaska Intertie. The interesting thing with the Alaska Intertie is it saves the interior ratepayers of Fairbanks close to $40 million a year annually, because there's no wheeling rates on it. It's a state-owned asset. And so if you think, so one of the things I've always said is, when we look at what PCE is, $45 million in rural Alaska, just the state's investment in the transmission line is a $40 million savings for Fairbanks. And then again, we do have the Renewable Energy Fund Energy Efficiency Program. So as a whole, we're a very large agency, AEA, by itself. And so I think this is one of the reasons, with the governor looking at it, we are asking one volunteer board to manage two multi-billion dollar corporations with different missions. And it's just, and that's one of the primary drivers. This is just a slide that I'll end on, but this is where we were back 4 years ago and where we are from FY21 to where we are in FY24, not counting this budget year this year. It just, we're very busy. And our board, this takes a lot of time from our board. Our last board packet was over 350 pages for our board alone. So,
thank you, Mr. Thayer. Are there questions? Questions for the speaker? I guess I have a question. We've heard from you, from AEA. We haven't heard from anybody from ADA and their likely impacts to their programs. Is there maybe somebody that could testify on their behalf that we can have or we can hear from before?
The short answer is, Mr. Chair, the short answer is yes. My conversation with Director Roraro was it does not affect the ADA operation, but we can get that on the record for you.
Okay. I think we'd like that. And then for my colleague to the right, who would probably want a real fiscal note or something that indicates exactly how much this transfer intends to cost. Right.
Here, I will work with the Ledge office to provide one.
Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Are there further questions today on this executive order? Okay, well, like sounds like you're off the hook, Mr. Thayer. I will say that we did have some questions about this executive order as well as the other several that came on the first day of this scheduled session. I think we're the first committee to have heard an executive order, especially with substantive changes to law. I think there's some maybe disagreements or some partial disagreements about whether this is the right way to do it, but we will at a future meeting potentially bring this up again. And we will also just wanted to thank you for being here today. Thank you for presenting on behalf of the governor and his executive order. Are there any other questions of members before we adjourn the State Affairs Committee meeting? Okay, hearing none, Senate State Affairs Committee is adjourned at 4:03 p.m.